Good morning, everyone. We're going to get started. Thank you all for coming this morning. So I'm going to have invite Patty Callahan, who's the chair of the Women's Fund of Central New York. She'll come up to introduce our participants today. The Women's Fund is making a difference in the lives of women and girls from Onondaga, Cayuga, Madison, and Oswego counties. And through their efforts, they improve the lives of women and girls, serve as their voice and advocate, and educate women about philanthropy in order to advance their mission. So I invite Patty up to the podium.
Thank you, Eileen, and thanks, Thursday Morning Roundtable, for giving us this opportunity to collaborate with you on this very special event. We're really excited. I want to give a special shout out to Karen DeJarnett and her team from the Women's Fund, who did a great job organizing this event. So as Eileen mentioned, the Women's Fund has been around for a while. Since 2001, we've been reaching out in the community to fund projects in support of our mission to empower women and girls. Each year, we learn from organizations about the issues, the challenges, and the opportunities their organizations support. Inclusive of the grant awards we presented just this past summer, the Women's Fund of Central New York has given more than $325,000 in grants to a wide variety of projects supporting women and girls in Central New York. So we love that. Each year, we look at the grant applications and we see similar projects from different parts of the region. And we ask ourselves if there might be a way for organizations to collaborate, to leverage, and use the different resources to best serve our constituents. And when we started talking about the kind of events we want to sponsor, the Women's Fund Leadership Council talked about how there were many new women's affiliate groups coming together in Central New York. We wanted to see if the Women's Fund was aligned with any of these groups and if there were opportunities to collaborate. We thought that to begin the conversation, we should first see what groups are out there, what their missions and priorities are, and provide some information about common concerns and priorities. So we reached out to women's affiliate organizations to learn about their missions and priorities, and we found that there are some common issues. Our objective today is to inform the community about some of the issues facing women and how those issues impact the community as a whole, and to let organizations know the Women's Fund is open to opportunities for collaboration with other women's affinity groups. We're hopeful that today's session will spark interest and begin the conversation. We hope to continue the dialogue next month when we will talk with author Abby von Schlegel about women in philanthropy over a light breakfast at the Center for Philanthropy. It'll be on Wednesday, November 8th, beginning at 8 o'clock in the morning. Today, we gather with three women leaders, a president, a CEO, and a commissioner, who will help us move this conversation forward. I'd like to invite Jen Owens, who's the Senior Vice President and Chief Development Officer at the Central New York Community Foundation, who will lead us in this discussion. Jen?
Thank you, Patty, and thank you to TMR for inviting us to be here today. The Community Foundation has been sponsoring and supporting the Women's Fund since its inception, and really we exist as an organization to make sure that everyone who wants to engage in charitable giving in our community has a place to do that. So with more than 750 funds under management at the Community Foundation, the one thing they all have in common, despite having different purposes in our community, is that someone in our community said, Community Foundation, this is what we want you to do with this money. So when a group of women came to us and said, we want to start something and we want the Community Foundation to support us, we jumped on board and we've been supporting them ever since. So thank you to the Women's Fund's leadership, its council, who really pulls together and creates the energy that builds this fund to what it is today. So I'd like to start by introducing Nan Eaton. Nan, in addition to being a good friend, is recently become the president of the United Way as of September 1st. And I'd like to give her a round of applause because that's a big job. Nan has spent her career doing nonprofit work and working in our community, sometimes in paid capacity and oftentimes as a volunteer. She's really committed. She most recently was the Chief Development Officer and Director of Inclusive Recreation at Arise before assuming the role at the United Way. And she also served as Director of Development at the Syracuse Salvation Army, Director of Syracuse Weed and Seed Community Partnership, and the Community Services Manager at Home Headquarters, as well as Vice President of Housing Visions Unlimited. That's an incredible resume in a short period of time, and she's done a great job. She is also a graduate, as I am, of Leadership Greater Syracuse. So to talk about our friend Alice, I'd like to introduce Nan Eaton.
Thank you, Jen. Good morning. It's great to be here and see so many friends, and I look forward to making some new ones. I came here wondering something. I'm wondering if you know Alice. Or perhaps you've been Alice. I know I have at points in my life. You see, Alice is the 23-year-old single mom who got pregnant in college and had to drop out. And she works hard to take care of her daughter. It's a struggle, work getting to her service job, dropping her, taking the bus to drop her daughter at daycare, then taking a bus to get to work. Working, and if she has to work late, it means she misses her bus, so then she has to wait another hour and catch a bus and get to daycare late, which means that she pays a penalty because she's late. But she's determined she's going to raise her daughter and do a good job. And Alice is the 52-year-old grandmother in Oswego County who she and her husband raised their children. They worked hard. He works a back-breaking job, not for a lot of money, but he works hard. She's always worked at a diner, and together they raise their kids, and they're proud of what they've done, although now they find themselves in a situation where their son got involved with drugs, and he and his girlfriend weren't taking care of the kids. So now she and her husband are raising the grandkids, and she had forgotten how much kids eat and how fast their feet grow and how often they need to have new clothes, but somehow they're going to make it, because that's what families do. And Alice is the 28-year-old woman who's a single mom who works in a local nonprofit. And she does an amazing job taking care of her clients. And people love her. Her colleagues love her. And she's the proud mom to two beautiful little boys. She takes good care of her kids, although it seems like it's always a struggle to pay those bills at the end of the month. And recently, her son, her older son, who has asthma, had a medical emergency, and so now she's got all kinds of medical bills that she doesn't know how she's going to pay, because you see, her agency has a high deductible plan, which means that her insurance doesn't really help till she's already spent thousands of dollars, and of course she doesn't have them. And then, as luck would have it, her landlord, even though she's done a great job and been a great tenant, just told her that he's selling the building, so she's going to have to move. And she realizes that she's got to come up with first month's rent, last month's rent, and a month's security, and she has no idea how she's gonna do that. And she's wondering if she's gonna end up being a client of the organization where she works, because she really doesn't see a way clear. But she always tells her clients to be optimistic, and so she's gonna try to do that herself while she figures out this latest challenge that she's presented with. And Alice is the 33-year-old man who he and his wife are raising their three kids on the south side of Syracuse. He works hard as a high school graduate, never been able to get ahead, but he's always paid his bills and worked hard. Although their car just recently broke down, which meant a $600 bill he hadn't anticipated. And they sometimes go have breakfast at the Samaritan Center, because that helps out when they get to the end of the month and they don't quite have enough to buy groceries. And they're lucky on the days the Samaritan Center has sandwiches to give them, because then they can sit and have lunch with their coworkers because they have something to eat for lunch. But they're determined to get by, and they're trying to figure it out. Many of us think of Alice in the old days, or we've called Alice the working poor, people who are above the poverty guideline, but perhaps not by much, people living paycheck to paycheck, struggling to get by, never saving, and really not making enough to meet the bare necessities of life. In the United Way world, that's who we call Alice. People who are asset limited, income constrained, employed. So what is that like? What does that mean? Well, we know in Onondaga County, 41% of our residents receive some type of assistance, whether it's temporary assistance, cash benefits, which most use to pay their rent or put it toward their rent. Many receive food stamps, Medicaid, some may receive some child care subsidies or help paying their utility bills through HEAP. But 41% of the people who live in our county find themselves in that sort of financial situation. In our county, 15% of our residents are at or below the poverty line. And of course, we know that in Syracuse, it's a much higher number. In Syracuse, one of every two children is living in poverty. And in the rest of our county, the 15% who are in poverty, 24% more of our residents are ALICE households. So folks who aren't making enough really to get by, but are making more than the federal poverty guidelines. So what do we do about ALICE? What does that mean to be an ALICE household? Well, chances are it means that you move pretty often. We had 6,000 to 7,000 eviction cases in Syracuse last year, 80% of which were successful for the landlord, which meant that families were moving. Many children in our most challenged neighborhoods move 3 to 5 times a year. Imagine how difficult that is for a parent, for a child, for the school system. How do you educate a child who's in several schools in a year? How do you educate a child who has trouble getting to school, but it's hard because it's hard to sort out where do we live now and deal with my stress as a little one and my parents' stress trying to pay the bills and be a good parent, because everyone wants to be a good parent. It means living in substandard housing, which leads to health issues and all of the things that go along with it. It means that our future workforce is being impacted significantly by these economic challenges. And the workforce of the future is a key component of our future as a community. So what do we do about ALICE? Well, one of the things that has happened over the last few years is that our community is coming together to think about things differently, looking at things more strategically. So we have employers who have jobs. We have people in the community who are unemployed or underemployed. How can we bring those together to create a win-win for all? Through an amazing partnership that the United Way has been proud to support and provide the administrative backbone for, the Work Train Initiative brought together private industry, the foundations, and the service nonprofit service sector to think about what are the job skills we need for folks in the jobs we have, and what training do people need to be able to be successful in those jobs. The first focus was the healthcare industry, and thanks to an amazing partner, Loretto, and other healthcare institutions, the Work Train program in its pilot phase put 514 people into a pipeline, most of whom were on some sort of public assistance, and provided the educational supports, helped clear up legal challenges, provided the soft skills, job training that people needed to be able to be placed in employment, a pathway out of poverty. Of the 514 people brought into the program, 88% were placed in jobs. Many folks for the first time. Is it easy? No. It is not easy. Many of our folks have to take a job to get a kid to daycare and then get to a job. And we say, as you said, John, that's outstanding. 88% of people who had been unemployed are now employed. And you'll hear, have an amazingly high retention rate. And yet, what does that mean for those workers? And what does that mean for our community? What many people experience when they step up a little bit out of poverty into an entry-level job is that the benefits that have helped them buy their food and pay their bills and get childcare may end. We think of it as kind of starting to rise up and then falling off a cliff. Does that work? Is that something perhaps we need to think differently about if we want to help people build, experience success, feel the benefits of their hard work? Because imagine, if you're working and you're killing yourself to get your kid to daycare and get to a job and try your hardest at your job, and somehow it feels like it's almost harder than when you weren't working at all. That isn't much of an incentive for people to do all of this hard work. We want folks to feel the benefits of working. And so what we as a community are suggesting as we're trying these excellent initiatives and putting them together and thinking more about how we can do that, we are also saying, let's look at policies that impact people in our community. Because we know that most single parent households in our community are headed up by women. So we know that children and women are impacted most significantly by poverty in our community, or by being just enough above the poverty level that they don't get a whole lot of help. We want to think differently about that. So we are asking that our policymakers think about a change so that someone experiences a gradual decline in benefits as their economic situation improves. That would provide an incentive so someone could actually feel the benefits of working. And that's just one way of thinking about how we want to approach things as a community. We need to think about the availability and the quality of childcare in our community. Because if you're a working parent, it is impossible to pay rent, afford quality childcare. But what happens when children aren't in quality childcare? We will tell you that the literacy rates in our county are below the state average. Children are getting to kindergarten not ready. And if you're not ready by kindergarten, we know that it's very hard to be ready by third grade. If you've paid attention to the test results that the state released in the third grade ELA assessment, and we all know the test got harder. So all the districts expected the grades to be lower than they had been in the past. I'm not sure they expected the grades we received. So in Onondaga County, I don't think anyone will be surprised that FM had the highest scores. I think you may be surprised that the percentage of kids in the FM district who passed that third grade ELA exam was 68%. And it goes down from there. So we as a community need to think about how are we preparing children birth to five? How are we getting kids ready to be successful in school and in life? And then what are we doing to help people get into the workforce? And what are we doing to think about taking people into entry-level positions, providing the supports they need to move up in their career and have a pathway out of poverty? We are proposing changes, pilot programs in housing to think about how we deal with housing and create greater housing conditions for people who are renting and how we help them pay to rent in those places. We're looking at ways to help put programs in place for children who are transitioning from fifth to sixth grade or eighth to ninth grade so they don't drop out, because we know that's sort of, those are the transition times when they get on the dropout train. We as a community are looking in new ways, developing new strategies for providing supports that make sense and that work. And I am proud to tell you that working together with the business community, Center State CEO, employers, the foundations, the United Way is proud to be coordinating these sort of initiatives and working with everyone and working with people in the community. We can turn things around, but it's a big lift. And we as a community all need to think together about how we make that happen. So I started out by asking you if you know Alice. And my question to you again is, do you know Alice?
Sure.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nan. The Women's Fund has noted over time in looking at the applications that come in from so many nonprofits, the interconnectedness of all of these issues, and that's really why we're bringing people together to make sure that those bubble up, to think about the idea that three to five times a year a child moves and what that does to educational attainment, just the connectedness of childcare and the workforce. And I want to bring Kim Townsend up to talk a little bit about workforce. Kim is the president and CEO of Loretto. She has most recently, before that, been the Associate General Counsel and Senior Director of Government Affairs at Welch Allyn. And she is the governor's appointee to the New York State Workforce Investment Board and one of the partners in WorkTrain. And so I want to bring her up to the podium. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I'd first like to just thank the Women's Fund and Thursday Morning Roundtable for convening this conversation this morning on a topic that I'm really passionate about, which is solving poverty. And I strongly believe that the poverty problem is solvable. It is not an insolvable problem. So I'll start with a little story. So every day on my route to work, I go through neighborhoods in the west and the south side of the city of Syracuse. And usually the neighborhoods are full of activity. There's a lot of things going on. You know, there's a mix of houses that are boarded and vacant, and there's also houses that are very well kept in the neighborhoods. And a few months ago, I began to notice something that was curious to me, curious sight. It was the growing mountain of stuffed toys with candles in front of them and balloons. It was the white plastic table on the side of the road, the top of it covered in empty gallons of hard liquor. It was the aquarium in the front of the house that was empty, not full of water, but instead full of toys and little dolls and trinkets with a picture of a little girl next to it. And then it was the large billboard-sized picture of a confident young man that's permanently affixed to the outside of a home. And it occurred to me that all of these things are shrines. These are shrines to children who have passed too young, that people have put up. And, you know, as much as we've seen a lot of press this week on the Las Vegas shootings, which were just senseless tragedies, terribly, terribly sad, here in the city of Syracuse, people are getting shot every single day. Pick up the paper and read it. And so if you believe the Century Report, which came out last year, it says that Syracuse has the highest concentration of extreme poverty for blacks and Hispanics of any city in the United States. East Los Angeles, Chicago, wherever. And 65% of my frontline employees come from those most highly impoverished neighborhoods. And so most of these are single women of color, head of household, and these are incredible women. They are overcomers. They face every kind of challenge. They're housing insecure. They may have health issues. They're caregiving. They try to keep their children safe from the gang violence. There's any number of issues that these people face. And one six-week period last summer, we had two employees and the 15-year-old son of an employee get killed in gang violence. So these women have very, very challenging lives. So we go to Loretto. What's the purpose of Loretto? Talking about why, right? Seth Godin tells us to always ask why. Well, Loretto was founded in 1926 for a single purpose. It was to solve a social issue that was in this community. And at that point, in 1926, the social issue was that individuals who were very good community citizens were aging, but if you didn't have a family in town to care for you, you were spending your last days in the county poor farm. And people thought that that was just wrong. So the Sisters of St. Francis in the Syracuse Diocese came together and they formed Loretto, which was the first diocesan home for the aged in North America to care for 100 individuals of any faith. And so if you fast forward to 2017, I believe that Loretto continues to exist for one sole purpose, and that is to address a social issue. And the social issue of our day is poverty. And so as we look at Loretto now, it's the fourth largest health system in Central New York. It's a nonprofit, always has been, still a nonprofit. And each year, we serve 9,000 individuals across 19 sites in Onondaga and Cayuga County. So 70% of the people we serve every year are Medicaid eligible. And 15% of the people we serve each year are not frail elderly. They're people who are young, who have complex medical conditions, and also have behavioral, mental health, and substance abuse issues. This is the new long-term care population. And so that might be the 25-year-old IV drug user who has septic wounds. It may be the 30-year-old person who weighs 600 pounds who can't manage their diabetes. So here you have mostly women of color, head of household, coming from these highly impoverished neighborhoods facing amazing challenges, coming to work each day, sometimes taking two or three buses to get there, to care for people who are in the most vulnerable stages of their life. I mean, honestly, this is an incredible story. And it's a hard job, and they do it with courage and with stamina and with compassion. So as you look at Loretto, we really believe that the solution to the poverty issue and the most effective anti-poverty strategy is a good job with good benefits and opportunities for the future for personal and professional growth. We live by that. So as Nan noted, we have a partnership with HealthTrain. And so HealthTrain goes out into the community to those neighborhoods where they know people have structural barriers to employment. Now that might be they've never held a job. That might be that they have never known anybody that's held a job, or they might be refugees. So working with HealthTrain, in the last 3 years, Loretto's hired over 300 employees, and we have a 79% retention rate, which is incredible. And this is in an industry where a 60% annual turnover is the norm. So how do we do that? We do that through partnerships, through care, and through support of our employees. So we know our employees have health challenges. Now, all of our frontline employees have access to no-cost or very low-cost health care. 500 of our employees pay absolutely no health premiums, and the rest of the individuals pay 10%. So they have access to very low-cost health care. But still, every year, people are dying, right? People are having heart attacks, strokes, aneurysms. And so I began to ask myself, like, why are people dying if they have access to great health insurance? Because they can't pay the $30 copay. And so Loretto, at the end of last year, took its small employee health office, and we created a full-size urgent care clinic for our employees and their families to get free access to care. And I'm proud to report we've had over 300 urgent care visits in the first 6 months of this year. So we're making a difference there. Another big issue, as Nan pointed out, for our workforce is unforeseen hardship, right? So every year the call goes out, people want to do a collection, too often to defray the cost of burying a child. And we would respond as a community. So with an initial seed grant from the Loretto Foundation, we've set up the We Care Fund, which we're just about to launch. And it will be available to employees and administered by employees to help individuals with those unforeseen hardships. Transportation is another enormous issue. So having access to reliable transportation is really a quality of life issue, right? It's the peace of mind that knowing when you wake up in the morning and it's 10 degrees, you're going to be able to drop your kids off at school and they won't have to walk. It's also knowing that, hey, I have the freedom to go on my way home from work to the grocery store that offers lower prices on groceries. And so our employees, however, most of them rely on public transportation, our frontline employees. And so in partnership with ACMG Federal Credit Union, as well as HealthTrain, we've established a car buying program. So if individuals are able to do the financial literacy and do the one-on-one counseling sessions and enter a savings program, ACMG will ensure that they are able to finance a car. And that is a life-changing experience. And finally, I'll just speak to education. What I always tell people in new employee orientation is, maybe you're starting at Loretto today and you're in one place in your life. You're a home health aide, you're a food service worker, but someday you'd like to be a registered nurse or an accountant. You can do that at Loretto. And so what we've done with our employees, again with HealthTrain and the Training and Upgrading Fund of SEIU 1199, is we've launched a pilot program this year where we've taken 15 of our exceptional CNAs and paid for their tuition, given them flexibility in their schedules and educational support to go to the BOCES LPN program. Now there is a real dearth of LPNs in this area. These women are going to be able to take their license and go anywhere. So I guess to close, I would just say I'm extremely proud of our employees at Loretto. And this year, we're on target to hire 1,000 people. And I know in my heart that it's likely that most of those individuals will be single women of color from head of households. And that's really important that we consider that, because I know when we change the life of a mother, we change the whole future of a family. And as an employer, that's something that Loretto is committed to do. Thank you.
When you hear the overwhelming statistics and the barriers that women face, it's really wonderful. And we see this a lot through the Women's Fund, the way that women can rise above all of their challenges. And you use two words, stamina and compassion. And I think Lisa Alford is going to speak a little bit to the connections and the way that women can find their way. They can meet their challenges and really exceed expectations. So Lisa joined Onondaga County in 2007 as the Commissioner of the Department of Aging and Youth. She was appointed Commissioner of the Department of Aging and Long-Term Care Services in 2005, and she's going to speak to making the connection.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. I like response. One of the things that, as Jen mentioned, I'd previously been commissioner for the Department of Adult and Long-Term Care Services, or Aging and Youth, and now Adult and Long-Term Care Services. We have a wide range of services for folks in the community, and many of the people that we serve in our community are men and women, but we certainly serve a large number of women in our community for lots of reasons. In the Department of Adult and Long-Term Care Services, we actually have the Office for Aging. The Office for Aging provides services for persons primarily 60 years of age and older. We have everything from nutrition services, we have health insurance counseling services, we also have a senior employment program. Many seniors find themselves in the position of looking for a job when they haven't done that for years, either they've been laid off or due to some other transition, they find themselves looking for a job. So in that particular program, we actually have the ability to provide several months of subsidized employment with the hopes that they will gain full-time employment. We also have our Long-Term Care Resource Center in New York Connects. We actually provide information and assistance for persons that have chronic health and medical conditions regardless of age. And one of the things I always tell folks, people think that if something is government related, that it's only for persons that are low income. And many of our services, while we're talking about persons that are the working poor, many of the services that we have in our department and many other county departments are actually provided to persons in the community regardless of income. We also provide mental health services. I would say now more than ever, our mental health system is really being challenged with persons that not only need mental health services in the traditional sense, but substance use services in our community. And that's regardless of where they live. And if you think that doesn't impact families, it does. Whether it's the child or the parent, him or herself, that's needing services, that's vitally important. We also have adult protective services. Adult protective services gets involved with families. If the person has the difficulty or the inability to take care of themselves, or they are at risk of harm to themselves. And we actually have in Victor County, we have about 30 people that we actually are the guardian for. In other words, they don't have anyone else in their family that has, they aren't able to do it, and they don't have anyone that's able to assist them in taking care of themselves. So the county actually has the responsibility of being the guardian for about 30 persons in this particular community. And lastly, our Veterans Services Agency. We assist with gaining assistance to various benefits, referring to various organizations in the community. Many times it may be burial benefits, it may be other veterans benefits. So we also will assist them in gaining those benefits. Who connects with us? I will say many times it is women that are connecting with our office. We tend to many times be the ones that are going, filling out the forms, getting information for our family members. And here are some examples. It may be the 60-year-old woman who's recently had a life change, and she's trying to figure out, how do I maintain my home? How do I stay in my home? How do I pay for groceries? And we have programs, we assist persons with accessing programs such as SNAP, or what we normally call food stamps. It also may be, how do we stay healthy? How do I, as a woman, stay healthy and stay in my home? We have exercise programs, and one of our big initiatives in the past several years has been a fall prevention program. That's the number one reason that older adults actually go to the emergency room is because of falls. We also may have the person or woman that has a child with a disability, and she's trying to figure out, well, how do I work? How do I get the child to school or childcare? How do I take care of myself? How do I have some respite? Well, our New York Connects, or Long-Term Care Resource Center agency, provides that type of assistance to many families. And again, while I say it's regardless of income, we certainly serve persons that are working and trying to figure out, how do I balance the resources that I have but still be able to work? And lastly, another example, we have persons that many times are figuring out, how do I care? I'm working, because most caregivers work. Most caregivers are also women. And how do I balance? I'm trying to assist my mother or my father in staying at home. And so we have free caregiver classes that we offer to the community that we want to make sure that they know about. We give them all sorts of resources, not only for how they take care of the person, but how do they take care of themselves? And here's some information. When we say getting help, what is it that we want people to know when they're actually looking for services in the community? We want to make sure that we are at health fairs, organizations, or opportunities like this to let the community know about the services that we have in the community. We also send information out to organizations via email, senior centers, dining sites, other community organizations. And we want to make sure that people know about the services that we have. And again, so many times people will wait until there's a crisis. And really what we want folks to do is to reach out to our office before there actually is a crisis, so they can balance and be more planful about what it is that they're utilizing to assist themselves. One of the things we also always share is that we want other people to be ambassadors. While they may be dealing with something in their community, many times the best information you can get is through someone else who's gone through the same type of thing. So I always tell people is that you don't go through challenges for yourself alone. whatever you go through, make sure you help and tell someone else. You may have the answer that someone needs to make it through a particular situation. I know I've been in that situation myself personally, that there was information that someone shared with me, had it not been for that particular conversation, if they had held that experience that may have been even very difficult or embarrassing for them, I wouldn't have been able to use that information to share and make my life easier for myself and my family. I always tell people that we're in this together, regardless of education, income, socioeconomic background. So many times we think that it's only happening in my family. And generally, we talk with someone, what we will find that it's not just your family that's going through something, it's actually other people as well. Your family member, your friend, sometimes even the stranger that's in the line at the grocery store. And so we want to make sure that people understand that you're not necessarily that different from someone else. Your problem or challenge may be different from theirs, but nevertheless, we all have challenges that we have to deal with. I always use the analogy that it starts with me. And I've told this story many times, that in order for you to be able to help someone else, you have to make sure that you take care of yourself. I always like to use the analogy when you're on the plane and they tell you that if there's a loss of cabin pressure and the loss of oxygen, the first thing that you have to do is to give yourself your oxygen first. And that's vitally important with whatever we go through in life. You're not able to take care or help anyone else, even in your family, if you don't take care of yourselves. And many times what happens is that we think that we have to give and give and give and give. And what happens, we many times are the oxygen that keeps the rest of the people in our family going. And if we don't take that mental health day, or if we don't, you know, go to the therapy appointment, or if we don't exercise, or if we're not eating properly, we can't do anything for anyone else in our families. So what we want to make sure is that as women and as persons in our community, that we take times. But I would also invite, if you also have a friend, that sometimes we need to hear that from someone else to remind us, you know, you seem like you're really challenged right now with what's going on. Take a day, take some time. Let's go to have a cup of coffee or a cup of tea. Sometimes we need someone else to actually say that to us, because we can get so involved with day-to-day activities that we forget about taking care of ourselves. One of the things that we also find that can be a challenge with persons in our community is that people become very isolated. And when you're isolated, it's very easy to think that you're in this alone or that you're by yourself and no one else is dealing with this particular challenge. So we want to stay connected to family members, friends, being civically involved, stay engaged. So we want to make sure that you stay connected, you don't stay isolated. That's also one of the things that we see with persons that may be dealing with anxiety and mental health challenges. When you're much more isolated, that becomes much more of a problem. And I always say, be gentle with yourself. We're only human, all of us. Sometimes we have moments where we all can become overwhelmed because we don't take care of ourselves, or the issues that we're dealing with in our life are very challenging and can be overwhelming, and that can happen to anyone, regardless of education, age, income, what have you. We also want to make sure that what we hear and that we listen and learn from each other, that we all have a story. Do not assume that the learning only happens one way. Don't assume when we talk about the women and the families that have challenges that there isn't something that you can learn from them. Kim talked about the resiliency and the determination of many of the families that the women that work with her. Don't assume. Make sure that you take the time to listen to people's stories and learn from them as well, because everyone has a story. And one of my favorite quotes that I will leave you with is by George Washington Carver, a famous American who was a scientist. And he used this quote to help inspire others. And he says that how far you go in life depends on your being tender with the young, compassionate with the aged, and sympathetic with the striving and tolerant of the weak and the strong. Because someday in life, you will have been all of these. And I think that we all can attest to that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lisa. Lisa mentioned listening and learning from each other, and that's really what today was all about. And I want to thank Nancy, Kimberly, and Lisa for being here, sharing their stories. We've heard a lot of issues that have been outlined that exist in our community, but also a lot of positive things that are happening. And so I know Eileen is going to facilitate some conversation and questions because I don't want to miss a minute with these lovely ladies.
Hello, thank you for your excellent presentation. I wanted to ask a question involving trust, and maybe for the commissioner, but the others might respond. I think the Loretto model is really potentially transformational. People in my acquaintance seem to have a trust issue with getting involved in public services because that there may be, you know, experience with the police that they've had and their families, and they don't quite trust that the services will be there without any strings, or they're proud people and they don't want to sort of admit that they need the Samaritan Center or a food bank. Do you sense that there are people who you're not reaching because of that issue?
Yes. We frequently find, especially with older adults, many times they may not have the resources and are very reluctant to apply for things such as food stamps. And the way our staff have attempted to have some of those discussions is to say that, you know, you've worked hard all your life and you've put into these resources in our country, and that this is an opportunity for you to receive some of the benefits of your years of labor in our community. And while it may not seem like a lot, when we use the example very similar to say, you know, you've paid into Social Security and now that's a benefit that's afforded to you. The same thing with food stamps. This is now something to help you so you can stay healthy and so you can stay home as long as it's safe and feasible to do so. And this is something that we believe can help you do that. And that's how we attempt to approach that subject. But I definitely will agree that we do have people that are very proud and don't want to access certain public benefits.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The question I have is, everything that all three of you ladies have talked about this morning is very useful information. I sometimes wonder how it is that you're able to communicate to all those people that need this type of information, where the services are, what people can do to be helpful, and they want to be helpful. How do you reach the people that usually need it the most, are least likely to know where to go to get it?
I'd like to start with that. I think the answer is that it's about people in the community talking with people in the community. And when you have the nonprofits that are located in neighborhoods, and we in Syracuse have the Greater Syracuse Hope Initiative, which is our version of the governor's anti-poverty program, and folks from all sectors of the community have come together to think about what we can do together. So it's really about a trusted messenger delivering the message. And if we're in the community rather than sort of people in the community having to come to the mountain, that makes all the difference. And that's a lot of what has happened over the last few years. And if I could take one sec to say, give a real shout out to Kim and Loretto. The National Fund selected Loretto as one of 20 organizations in the United States that's part of what's called the employer. I don't want to say it in case you were going to say it.
Oh, go ahead.
The Employer Academy. So this is looking at organizations that are really committed to helping provide supports to employees in ways that make a huge difference in their lives. So I just want to give you a round of applause for that very important program.
And I think another aspect of getting the word out is through these partnerships. And so I think more than any other time in this community, organizations are coming together because they're realizing it's really not about turf. It's about coming together to solve problems, to improve the lives of the people in our community, and to make a difference. And so I know that we would not know half of what we know, Loretto as an organization, if we did not have these great partnerships with other organizations in the community.
And I would echo what has already been said as far as trust. Our department certainly partners with a lot of nonprofits in the community, and people who have had positive experiences, we ask them to certainly, they are sometimes the biggest ambassadors for recommending or suggesting us to other people, but we're at health fairs, Juneteenth celebrations, you know, various other, we work with other organizations, whether it's veterans groups, the dining sites, you know, when people are dining, you know, our staff may go by those particular activities. So we don't just wait for people to come to our building. We're out in the community all the time, making sure that people know about what it is. And we still know, a lot of people don't know, so that there's still work to be done.
With very informative and very hopeful presentations. With respect to connections with other organizations and nonprofits, I haven't heard you mention the various faith communities that exist in our a larger community, and how you deal, how you make your efforts more successful in dealing with people of faith and the faith leaders in the Central New York area.
In our adult and long-term care services department, we many times will have many of our caregiver classes will be at faith institutions in the community. Anytime we have a workshop or an activity on our e-blast list, that also includes communities of faith. We have even partnered with Interfaith Works for various projects and initiatives. They actually were part of an initiative we had that worked specifically with older adults in the community. So there are various ways, whether it's the outreach about the services we have, but actual concrete partnerships. We've actually partnered with many faith communities to do that.
Yeah, and the Greater Syracuse Hope Initiative is all about bringing everyone in the community together so they can talk. So there were many listening sessions at churches and other locations, and we can always do more. Mm-hmm. The reality is bringing people together, to me, often yields results that you hadn't ever had on your agenda.
And we're always available. If there are organizations, faith community institutions that are interested in speakers, we're always available to go out and speak.
Great presentations. One of you talked about this policy change. When somebody starts out of poverty, then they get a job, then some of the other benefits go down. So do you have some specific recommendations of policy changes that ought to be made in the public sector?
Yes, that's something that communities across the state are talking with the governor's office about, thinking about where we raise that sort of income level so that people actually can benefit from an economic boost and a gradual decline. Right now, there for some things, there's a 5-month period, but that's often not enough. I mean, who gets a raise in 5 months? No one, right? So, I mean, you start out at $10 an hour. You're not going to be making more than that in 5 months. So we're looking at a longer term.
Thank you very much for being here. Good morning. It seems as if transportation is a thread amongst all three of you. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you could talk about suggestions for improving public transportation in the area.
Well, Central's been a big part of the conversation and certainly is looking at that. And we're also looking at, with Center State and our Work Train partnership and the HOPE Project, Wheels to Work initiative, so that there's a way to think about giving people access to transportation, whether it's partnering with nonprofits that have vans that aren't always being used and thinking about, can they get people to jobs? Because many of the jobs out in the suburbs, there aren't buses. Mm-hmm. And there are jobs that are shift work that their buses don't run then. So, I mean, UPS has said to me, we have jobs, bring us people. And we just can't get people to the jobs. So it's a big challenge for the community. And I think we're looking at both, public transportation and also thinking about ways to give people access to vehicles or sort of shared transportation that works in terms of different hours of the day.
Yeah, and I know Centro had some real budgetary issues a year or two ago where they were looking at cutting certain lines, which really would be devastating for a lot of our employee population. And we amassed a bunch of information regarding use and timing, and I have to say they were incredibly responsive. I think Centro has, to your point, been a very good partner, but like everyone else, has its own budgetary considerations.
I would add that in the aging community, we do have some small funds that are available for some transportation services, particularly for older adults to get to medical appointments, some social activities and things like that. But I would also add and offer one of the things I believe that the community can do, especially when housing is going up, I would offer to pay real close attention to the, whether it's the zoning or whoever is approving those communities, because we've had situations in our community whereby communities have been approved, the target has been older adults, it was built, and after the fact, the conversations were held with the public transportation. And so the way it was actually built and designed, even if the resources had been there, there was not the ability for a bus can't not back up. You've got to be able to turn around. So a lot of times there may be, you know, an effort or focus on developing housing or other services. And what happened, you had older adults that were really in a part of town, they didn't have access to public transportation, so they weren't able to get to whether it's grocery shopping or medical appointments. And a lot of the medical offices are now farther out and not necessarily on the bus lines where people can get to. Or if they do, there's some large practices. The bus stops at the beginning, and it's a long walk to get to, some of you probably know, you know, a long walk to get to the actual office, and that's a real challenge. Again, we have some small resources for door-to-door and door-through-door, as well as some volunteer projects or transportation for older adults, but it is definitely a huge challenge. And I would also echo the concern. I was watching very closely when Centro was having their challenges with their budget and the hearings. And I think people forget, you may not be using transportation, but if you have caregivers for yourself or your loved ones, if the aide can't get to them, and the aide is only typically working, say, 2 or 3 hours at a time, they're only helping with, you know, personal care for a short period of time, but the bus only comes 7 in the morning and 7 at night, well, the person can't get to them. And we frequently do run into the challenge whereby we have the resources to serve, provide personal care, but an agency doesn't have a critical mass of enough persons in a particular area, so they don't send their aides there. They wait till they have a critical number, so it's more, you know, more cost effective for them. So those are issues that all of us need to pay attention to. Remember I said we're all connected? Again, you may not use the transportation, but not only the jobs, but services that you may need or someone that you're concerned about may need, that's also why it's important to you, and you need to pay attention to that.
Hi, my name is Khadija Abdul-Qadir, and I am currently involved in a new nonprofit organization that's coming up in Syracuse called New American Women's Empowerment, mostly concentrated on refugees and New American. I myself am a refugee. I'm passionate about the organization and the team that's organizing. I have been the first front as every day. So mostly what you have mentioned from the policy changing, the stories that have been told from the job, the job forces, and how most of the things, basically, like every single one of you have mentioned already, and everybody in the right now in the room, I know there are services out there, but it's lack of I think communication barriers most of the times, because most of the refugees in the community has language barriers. As of now, as you can see, I am probably the only non-New American in this room. And knowing that there could be a slight change, it could make a huge difference. And also, just wanted to see how our organization, who's coming up right now, who wants to do better for the community and also get involved, how do we connect with you? And also, I think it's not actually a question. I just wanted to open up to the audience and everybody and to you that we are here and we want to see what we can do as a community and as an agency to break those barriers, whether it's a religious barrier, whether it's a cultural barrier, whether it's a language barrier, whatever the barrier is, so that we can serve our community better. Because every single thing that has been mentioned today is something that we have talked about at every single meeting that we had, and we know it exists. And also the reason we call it New American Women's Empowerment was the purpose that we know if we help women mm-hmm. in their family, that we're not only helping her, but we're helping the whole surroundings. And we know that that's the point to concentrate on. And also there are barriers that we may not even mention at this setting, but could be there that we're not even thinking about it. So we believe that our organization existing would break those. So I guess that's what I was going to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you again so much for giving us your time this morning to be here to present. It was a real pleasure. Thank you again.